Welcome to Chapter 3 of Integrating Individuals, Work Integration and Changing Times. I'd like to introduce our first guest, Caitlin Rennie, an occupational therapist working at Bridgepoint Active Healthcare. Today, we'll be discussing the importance for work integration for epileptic patients. Welcome, Caitlin. If you'd like to describe what an occupational therapist does and your role as an occupational therapist for our listeners today.
Sure. So as an occupational therapist, our role is very diverse and broad, which makes OT very interesting. But my specific role, I work in a day treatment center. It serves a lot of different types of populations, but we deal mainly with the neuro population, with adults and older adults. And neuro encompasses stroke, ABI, and spinal. But OTs in general can work in really any area, in pediatrics, in geriatrics, and they can work in mental health or physical health, pretty much in hospitals, private practice. But myself, I'm in a hospital day treatment area. And our main job, really, and the job of all occupational therapists, the bottom line is to enable occupation for individuals. And occupation is really whatever that means for an individual person. And that can be their basic occupations of daily life, like getting dressed, bathing, eating, the things we have to do every day. It can be a little bit more complicated things that we have to do daily, like preparation for meals, shopping, financial management. It can mean an actual occupation, so someone's work and career. It could mean their hobbies, the things that they really enjoy doing. It can be driving, really anything that somebody is meaningful for somebody or somebody wants or needs to do. And what we look at with people is that if they have any physical impairments that are preventing them from engaging in the things that they want or need to do, we perform assessments and help them rehabilitate themselves so that they're able to achieve their goals. And sometimes that means working towards getting to back how they were before, whether it was an injury or anything that happened to them. Or it also means working on strategies that they may have to do things a little bit differently and learn different ways of doing, achieving the same goal. Mm-hmm. And also, we also deal a lot with safety in the fact that people in their homes, if they need special devices to be able to function safely, we help them make those choices and what's the most safest option for them in terms of equipment. But pretty much occupational therapy in general is just working on what's meaningful for a person and for everybody that's so different. And we work them to achieve whatever goal that might be. In my clinic in particular, it's very client focused. They determine what they want to work on, and we help them, whatever that looks like for them, whether it's, again, making strategies or whether it's working on them being able to complete that task how they did before, whatever injury or medical event happened for them.
That's wonderful. It seems like such a meaningful career. So specifically, what treatment plans would an occupational therapist in place to help epileptic clients?
Sure. So for epileptic clients, it's, again, like everybody, everyone's very individual. So we look at everybody, regardless of their diagnosis or what they're going through, we take everybody as an individual case. So it really depends on what somebody is experiencing. So some people post when they have a lot of seizures. I mean, it is a neurological event that affects the brain. So some people could have cognitive deficits that are affecting their ability to focus or affecting their memory. So in that way, we would perform cognitive assessments to kind of determine what areas of challenge they're having. So examples of assessments that we do in our clinic would be kind of a memory assessment. The Rivermead Behavioral Memory Test, or RBMT, is one that really helps us to determine the different types of memory and someone's strengths or someone's areas of weaknesses so that we know how to really what to work on with them to improve that area. Some people, if they're having difficulty with attention or focus after having After a seizure history, we can perform an assessment such as the T, which is the test of everyday attention. And again, that breaks down different types of attention, such as selective, sustained attention, divided attention, and determine kind of what areas is challenging for somebody and how we can help them with that. If somebody's having any physical difficulties after due to the epilepsy, such as upper extremity weakness or fine motor, again, we do assessments to determine the degree of impairment. So grip strength, pinch strength, fine motor, such as the 9-hole peg test is one assessment that we do to just determine what treatments we can do to help their upper extremity strength. And it also depends on someone's goal as well. So if somebody comes to us and says they have difficulties with attention, but it's not really something that they want to work on, they'd rather work on, you know, improving their fine motor ability if they have some hand impairment, then even though they have an attention deficit, if that's not an area of concern for them and it's not really impacting their everyday life, we do go client focused. So we would do our sessions and really focused on the upper extremity, and we let them guide their treatment plan in that way, which is one of the things I really like about OT in my role right now, is that even if somebody has a multitude of impairments, they get to pick which ones are most important for them that are impacting what they need to do in their everyday life, and we can really narrow in and work on those goals with them.
Caitlin, that is such a unique approach and a meaningful treatment strategy. You're really helping mental health and overall wellness by targeting what the client wants to improve on. So when it does come to mental health and self-esteem, how do you think individuals living with epilepsy feel when they do get denied or rejected from workplace occupations? Is there anything occupational therapists can do to help? One major concern would be returning to driving. So how would an occupational therapist assist an epileptic patient to gain that ability back, for say?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, it like anything, it can be very upsetting when somebody has a diagnosis of any kind of condition, when it's making it harder for them to engage in the things they want to. For workplace, we do assist people with return to work plans. So if somebody, if an epileptic client came to us and said they were, let's say they had a difficulty now, let's say they had difficulty paying attention and they thought that this was going to affect either the job that they already had or finding a new job, we would help them work on that skill, and we would also help them kind of come up with possible accommodations that they might need at a workplace. Something that we have at our clinic, which is very helpful for if somebody has a cognitive impairment, which is not always the case with epilepsy, but there are cases. We have a neuropsychologist on our team that I make a referral to that does a lot of higher level assessment as well, and specifically can make a lot of return to work recommendations that can be sent to the person's family doctor and communicated to the employer. And employees do have a responsibility to provide accommodations. So whether that be a quiet work environment, reduced work hours, anything like increased breaks, then that all goes into our plan for somebody. And it does differ whether somebody's going back to a job or whether they're trying to find a new job. But it just, we kind of just help them, even if they don't have a job yet, we make accommodations and a plan for them of what they would need when they do find a job, and pass it to their family doctor so that after they're out of our program, their family doctor can continue to follow up and help them make sure that those accommodations are in place. Mm-hmm. With the driving aspect, that is something that's also complicated for anybody who has a neurological event. Doctors are legally required to suspend someone's license through the Ministry of Transportation if they have any concerns about driving. And for a person with epilepsy, unfortunately, anybody who has even one seizure, the license is typically expired for their own safety, of course. And different doctors have different rules about when someone can return to driving. I know the average time is usually they like someone to be 6 months seizure free. and obviously have their medications very controlled. The occupational therapy role with that is that we do help complete certain assessments to see if there are any cognitive or visual perceptual or reaction time deficits that are concerning. So with everybody at our clinic, we kind of have a battery of assessments that we complete when someone comes to us with a return to driving goal. Those ones that we complete most commonly are the trail making assessment parts A and B. So that's a alternating attention task that we do test on speed. So there are norms and cutoffs for that that we want to see someone get. So if they fall below those cutoffs, that kind of raises a concern for us of potential higher collision risk. We do the MVPT, which is the motor free visual perceptual test, just seeing their visual perceptual ability and if there's any difficulties with that. We have the DynaVision at our hospital, which we're fortunate enough to have, which is a large light board that tests scanning ability and reaction time. And again, there's cutoffs that we look at. If somebody's not making those cutoffs, that's when it could be a little concerning. And we usually do a MoCA as well, just as a general cognitive screen.
Yeah.
And then what we do with those assessments is we give them to the family doctor and we say if we have any concerns. If there are no concerns, unfortunately, someone with epilepsy still has to really wait until the doctor gives them approval, which can be very upsetting for someone because driving is a huge area of independence and a lot of people need driving for their job. And so it can be very disheartening to have that taken away and to have to wait the time. But really, I mean, all we can do is explain to people that, you know, driving is a very complicated task that we really want to make sure that they're safe to perform. So as annoying and as frustrating it is for people to have that taken away from them for the time that they're getting things figured out, it is, safety is always our number one priority.
Mm-hmm. It certainly really is disheartening to get your driver's license taken away. But what's great about how times are changing now is that there's a lot of remote work available. So hopefully that can kind of increase employment for people with epilepsy. So Caitlin, with what I'm understanding is as your role as an occupational therapist, you're actually giving employers a multitude of assessments that can actually aid in patients' employment by testing so many different areas like attention span, motor skills. You can identify strengths for a patient and become an advocate in a sense. Because the main discrimination that comes from potential workplace employers is actually workplace attitudes, the belief that an individual won't be as productive because they have a neurological condition, or employers cannot give them the same workload as they would to their colleagues because they believe it's going to put them at a risk for a potential seizure. Again, bringing back that fragile sticker label that Muhammad mentioned with his challenges living with epilepsy. Workplaces might not be able to take the chance to pursue the individual and drop them because of fear of having to be liable if an accident ever occurs in the workplace. So I think with these assessments, it can help define and clear misunderstandings with the condition.
Absolutely. And I think the important thing to remember with anybody is that the person's not their diagnosis. It's something that they're, you know, we all have things going on. And just because somebody has a medical history of something, it doesn't define them. And that sounds like something really simple that we should all know. But unfortunately, as you said, in these, there are some people out there that still, you know, see a diagnosis or see that sticker and it affects how they deal with somebody. And what we really try to do is that, you know, if someone's having any difficulties, you know, whether it be cognitive, physical, whatever it may be from their history of epilepsy, we help them work on improving those skills. And if they do need any compensation, like I was saying, for a gradual return to work plan or any kind of small accommodations in the workplace, that doesn't take away from their effectiveness as an employee or their effectiveness or as a person. It's just, you know, it's just no different than somebody Returning after any kind of physical injury or accident that they might need to ease back into work. It's just something that they're dealing with, and it really doesn't take away from their value as a potential employee. And hopefully employers will continue to realize that, and our assessments and our reports that we give to employers hopefully really highlight the strengths and really highlight that, you know, if there's a deficit, usually that can be overcome, worked on, or, you know, a small compensation can help.
I think it's great that you can provide accommodations to help a patient maintain their independence and occupation, but I think the idea of giving accommodations can be skewed, especially in a workplace. For example, giving accommodations such as longer breaks, someone might think that, oh, that's not fair. I only get 2 15 minutes and this person gets three, but it's just understanding the idea that to give someone who has an impairment an accommodation doesn't give them more of a leverage than you. If anything, it puts them in the same position as you. What limits a person's independence can be their external environment. So, for example, one example I like to use is no one questions the idea of glasses because vision impairments are so common in the world. So for people who wear glasses, they're not really considered disabled until you take those glasses away from them, right? Then, if you think about it, 50% of the world would be disabled and unfit to work because they essentially cannot see properly. So of course the accommodations aren't as simple with those who have epilepsy, but I do think that the work beliefs in general should change in order for these individuals to feel welcomed in their occupation, and increased self-worth is going to lead to increased job performance if the employers themselves can give them a chance.
Exactly. And it's upsetting when people do have the stigma for somebody, because I mean, it's really, like I said, it's just one part of them. It doesn't define them. It doesn't mean that they're not capable of doing things that, and it, even with driving, it doesn't mean that somebody with epilepsy can't drive. It's just unfortunately there is a little bit more of a process to get their license back, and it's just the length of time that they have to be seizure free and have their medications managed. But I mean, after that, and after their doctor is confident that that's the case, I mean, there's no reason that they can't drive safely, and as long as they stay on top of their medications and continue to follow up with their doctor. And I mean, then there really is no difference with somebody on the road who has a history of epilepsy or somebody who does not. And it's just making sure that they have the proper, like anything, proper medical follow-up and carry through. And then really there's no reason why they shouldn't have just the ability to do pretty much anything.
Well, we're really happy to have healthcare professionals who can vouch for patients with disabilities and help them with their everyday lives. And thank you so much, Caitlin, for coming on here and describing your role and doing what you do every day.
No, no problem, no problem. And thank you for helping raise awareness and just making sure that people know more about not only OT, but people with epilepsy, and how it does not define who they are at all. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Guys, that was the last and final chapter for our epilepsy series. For this chapter, we hope that recruiters, HR that are listening in can share this information with their company, employers, and give a chance to these individuals by educating and informing them. Currently, the unemployment rate for people with epilepsy is 2 to 4 times greater than that of the general population. But hopefully, with these changing times, we can bring that number down by being accepting and lowering any stigma. By being well informed, I encourage everyone to take part in Epilepsy Awareness Day, which occurs on March 26th annually. To spread awareness, what happens is you would wear a purple shirt, and be a part of events that are hosted. There must be a lot of virtual events that are hosted during this day as well, to support epilepsy awareness. Also, for those who do not listen to podcasts, and you know there's people who don't have access to technology, what you can do to make a difference is just share what you learned. Share what you learned, talk about it, talk about it with a colleague, with a friend, and just try to pay it forward. I would also like to give a special thanks to our guests, Mohammed Al-Quda, Priya Arosalvan, and Caitlin Rennie, for taking their time and sharing their expertise. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and I hope you seize the day. Not literally, though.